suspects have taken an ambulance.
I'm Mailing a Bat with Garrett Dillahunt, and he's starring in Ambulance. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I've got
a new look right now, so sorry.
I love it. You have a good head.
Yeah, luckily, right? I was nervous. I'm in Kentucky shooting a movie, and I'm like, well, let's try shaving my head. I kind of dig it.
Wait, what's the movie you're shooting in Kentucky?
I can't tell you yet. I'm sorry. It's not because of me. They're just like, everybody be quiet and whatever.
All right. You got this movie to talk about. And first of all, what a thrill behind me, this dog.
Yeah, that's
look how cute he is.
Oh, look at that head. Look at the size of that thing. And we were in this period, you know, or vintage Fiat, you know, standard transmission. It was really hard to shift around his giant paws, but we managed to squeeze in there. It was hilarious.
This is your Turner and Hooch moment.
That's actually Michael Bay's dog. It's one of, he has two big dogs he tries to sort of stick into his movies every once in a while. So this was his idea to stuff him in this tiny little car with me. The whole right side was slobber. You couldn't see it, but it was just all slobber.
Oh, was his real name Nitro, or they just changed it?
You know, I think so. No, I can't remember. I think it is.
I can't imagine, like, again, with this tiny little car, with this huge head.
He was game. It was hard to get him in the front seat, you know, because there's not much room. You know, he'd get in and his ass would kind of move around by me, and then he'd kind of be sitting on top of the seat, and then he'd be half in the back and half in the front. He's huge.
I don't think I've ever had so much fun being in the middle of two people like this in my show, you know, and this is just virtual. Ah. So
there would be no room for you in real life.
So how much fun is this movie, Garrett? It's just like a thrill ride a minute.
It is. I saw an early cut at Michael's house, and he tells me it's even better since the one I saw. So I can't wait to see it. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to make any of the premieres because of this job, which really bummed me out because I always seem to have something going on when it's the fun big ones. But I'm real proud of it. And I'm not surprised people are responding positively to it. I think we did a real good job. I'm real happy to be a part of it.
Yeah. And of course, there are all these little nuggets, like throwbacks to his movies. Do you know what I'm talking about?
That's right. I can't remember them all. I don't know if I had any in my scenes. But boy, it's great. And I love the sailing moment, you know, the carpool karaoke moment. He layers in humor, you know, unexpectedly, that sort of just bleeds off a little of the tension for a second, lets the audience catch its breath, and then he's right back with the body blows.
Oh, yeah, lots of those. And your character rides in this really cool, like, police, like, tricked out car.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. It was, if you got to ride around in a car, it's pretty cool to be in a comfy one like that. Yeah, I'm sure they built it just for this show. If I was to work with Michael Bay all the time, every single movie, I would say, well, there's some technology he's using that's never been used before. Like every single time, I feel like that's how things go with him. He's got a brand new camera, a new kind of drone, or like the greatest drone pilot in the history of drone pilots. You know, flying under, you know, jumping cars and stuff. He's amazing technically.
Yeah. How are you with gadgets and technology and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I enjoy them, you know, and I think I don't have kids, and I hear that's a big problem, but I'll be happily using my phone, and then someone will say, like, you know, you can just do this, you know. It's like that with me, like, oh that saves a lot of time, you know. So that's kind of how I am. I like it and appreciate it, but I know I'm starting to fall behind a bit. So I gotta catch up.
Yeah, I think that your career is so diverse, and I've been following you since Raising Hope. Even before Raising Hope, I know you did a lot of work, but it's when I saw you as like the dumb actor type thing in Raising Hope that I fell in love with you.
He's a sweetheart. You know, he had street smarts and a good heart. I really enjoyed that experience. And Greg and I have remained friends. Greg Garcia, who created the show. In fact, after I got out of Fear the Walking Dead, I called Greg and I said, listen, man, I'd like to have some fun. Let's do something. And so we wrote another show, and he and I produced it and shot it last year in Pittsburgh. It's called Sprung, and will probably drop on Amazon or IMDb TV or one of the Amazon-owned streaming platforms late summer. I'm really excited for you to see it. I think you'll like that too. And Martha Plimpton is also in that.
I know. You're reuniting with her. That's great.
Did I just like spoil a future question you were going to have?
What is it like to reunite with Martha Plimpton?
Oh, it's a dream. It's a dream. I've worked with a lot of great people in my life. I've been very fortunate. Sorry, a hot rod going by. Martha is just, she's just baggageless. You know what I mean? I'd never met her before Raising Hope. I don't know how, because we were both sort of theater kids from New York. I mean, she's literally from New York. I just mean, I went and moved to New York and did a lot of theater. We know a lot of the same people, but we never met. And it was just so easy to work with her. You know, she's just present. When I directed her in an episode and got into the editing room, you see how many little things she does that bail you out and make things even better. So when she showed up on the set of Sprung and she started, you know, saying those words, it was just like, we're in good hands. We're going to be all right.
You have wonderful chemistry.
She's great.
Yeah. You know, what's so cool about you is that I feel like you've got a lot of friends in the industry and you kind of reconnect with them over the years. I mean, talk about that, how important that is.
Well, I like that. That's the impression I have. I hope it's true. I always feel like, you know, I love working with people again, but my friends are talented. My friends are also busy. And, you know, you create these family kind of units every time you do a film or a television show, and then you disperse. And it's always this bittersweet moment. And you hope you'll get to work together again. And it's difficult. You know, sometimes you call, and most of the time you call, and they're busy too, and oh, I wish I could, and vice versa. So I'm glad that it looks that way from the outside, because, you know, I'm nowhere without the ensemble. You know, we need fans and we need ensemble, right? You know, we need a like-minded group of people who just want to tell the same story. It's always better, and I think it's a way to sort of promote longevity. And I hope I get to work with. I love working with people again and again.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of examples from my little deep dive that I did. You were in the film Killing Them Softly with Brad Pitt, although you were not credited. What was that about?
Well, I had worked for Plan B several times before. I really liked Brad on Jesse James, on Assassination of Jesse James. And it was the same director and obviously the same star and producing company there. I was in New Orleans shooting Looper. Remember that film? And they were shooting Killing Him Softly at the same time. And they had an idea for just this one scene. And they're like, do you have a minute? So I drove, you know, after I was done filming my day, I drove over there to shoot a scene. And I don't think it ended up getting in the movie. That's why I'm on credit. So sometimes I'm surprised those things show up. And I'm surprised when people ask questions about it. It's always these weird ones. You're like, huh. So that's what that was. It was a favor for friends. You know, it's kind of a similar situation with Blonde coming up. You know, I'd worked for, it's again, Andrew Dominik directing, who I'm a big fan of and I really admire. And over the years, I'd done a few, you know, readings with actresses looking for his Marilyn. He really searched for a long time. Saw a lot of people, and when he would screen test them, I'd come in and read all the other parts. Because I like being a part of that stuff. And then I had worked with Anna D'Armas on this film called Sergio, who shot in Jordan and Thailand. she's just a marvelous human being. I really like her a lot. I feel very brotherly towards her, and I'm excited for all her success.
She is so,
yeah, she's so great.
She's so scary. She was so scary in that. Remember that Ben Affleck movie? She terrified me in that film.
I haven't seen that one, but I saw her in Bond. Wasn't she a great agent?
Gorgeous.
She should be in, like, have her own spin-off series of movies about that. She did great. But anyway, you know, he called me when I was in Jordan. I said, "What do you think of Ana de Armas, mate?" You know, and I was like, "Oh, she's marvelous." And he was thinking about her, this Cuban actress, you know, to finally be his Marilyn. So I screen tested with her when we got back to LA. And he put me in just a tiny little part. I don't mind doing that. I like sort of, you know, just showing up and not telling anybody and having a good couple of days with my friends. So.
Well, speaking of tiny little parts, you've done this before too. So you went out for the assassination of Jesse James for like a big role. And then you settled for the smaller role, right? Well, is that true?
Well, I was cast in a different role. I was cast as Charlie Ford, which was my sort of biggest film role to date. But I had shot a pilot earlier in the year that initially they said wasn't going to go. And then all of a sudden they decided to pick it up at the last minute. So to my heartbreak, I was no longer available for the length of the shoot of Jesse James. So that they found a different role for me to play. but I do that. I'm a workaholic. And sometimes it doesn't pay. Sometimes you need to say no to things. You know, you take jobs because you think, whoa, am I ever going to work again? And yeah, you will. You know, you just like picking your projects a little better. But, you know, I was nervous. I think it was right after Deadwood. And I took the first job that came along and was happy it wasn't picked up. And then all of a sudden it was.
What
Any
was
other embarrassing moments from my past you'd like to bring up?
Yes.
You want to talk about the movies I'm in?
What was the TV role that you were doing that you had to give up the big role for?
Well, now I feel like I've dissed it, and now you want me to name it. But it was a short-lived series, and it was fine. It was called Book of Daniel. I played Jesus Christ, but you know, it didn't last long because people were angry about it. They didn't even know what it was about, and they were angry about it. And we lost all advertisers by the end of the first episode, I think. So it lasted just the length of my shoot on Jesse James. I would fly back and forth between the two, and I was like, Should have just played the other part, but Sam Rockwell stepped in to take over on Jesse James, and he's so fantastic in it. You know, I watch the movie now; I can't even imagine myself in it.
Oh, that's interesting.
He's so good. I mean, it's Sam Rockwell.
I know.
Sam Rockwell doing us a favor. You know what I mean? It's pretty great.
And talk about Deadwood. My second favorite person on the planet is Timothy Oliphant, who actually, I was his very first interview ever.
Oh, wow.
I know his brother really well from the music business. And, you know, he's just a great guy. So you've worked with him a bunch of times.
Well, I guess Deadwood and Justified, right?
Is there anything?
So twice. But I like him. I like him a lot. Deadwood was an amazing experience. We're all still very connected from that experience. You know, I can't speak for Tim, but it gave a lot of us careers. You know, I feel like it gave me one. You know, I was busy and I was working. I'd been working for a while, but I hadn't done much television at that point. And David, you know, there's just no better writer. There just isn't. And in a way, he ruined us. I was talking with Tim about this when we shot the Deadwood movie years later. Because we've all kind of tried to turn every job we've had then into the same experience, which is unfair and also impossible, you know. But I think it also has made some of the things we've done a little better, you know. And Tim agreed. I think he tried his best to sort of create the same atmosphere on Justified. You know, very creative, very fluid. You know, taking cues from the surroundings you're in on the day to tinker with the scene and make it even more interesting and plausible. David's a master at that. And, you know, it, I mean, it's the only job I've had where we would go on our days off to just watch. You know, I've never had that before on another show where you just sort of, I just want to go hang out because, you know, magic is happening over here. It's what we always thought acting was going to be like, or the movie business, or, you know, it's the cyclical creativity on set. It's just so much fun and so rewarding.
Yeah. Now, you went to New York University, got your MFA, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So now looking back on that, what do you think that's done for your career?
Acting school is a weird thing. You know, I loved it. I had almost no experience when I went there. I started acting, I thought, quite late. I took my first acting class in my last year of college, you know, just sort of as a lark. I was terrified because I'm a pretty shy person. And to my surprise, I loved it. I just loved it. And I felt like, oh, this is what I want to do. And now I'm out. Thought, I just don't know what I'm doing. You know, I need some more training. So I auditioned for a bunch of schools. I didn't have a lot of money at the time. So I like five of us crammed into this tiny Datsun B210 and drove to San Francisco where they were holding auditions. And I just crashed any school that would see me. Like, I'm sorry, I don't have the entrance, you know, the application fee, but I got monologues, you know. And so, you know, a lot of schools wouldn't let me in, you know, understandably. A lot of other kids there managed to find the fees, and that's fair, you know. But NYU was among the three or four that did, and I got into a few of those, and I chose NYU because I'd never been east of Montana. That was it. Thank God I chose them because, you know, it's a very you know, a lot of people came to see your shows.
Yeah.
You know, we all, some of us had agents before we were out of school, which was a real relief. You know, it was a real weight off your shoulders. So for me, it did a lot. You know, it gave me a place to practice. It kind of had a family waiting for me in a very strange city to this small town kid. You know, I mean, I was in New York. It was overwhelming at first. So I loved it, and I still have, you know, friends from my class to this day, and I'm still in touch with some of my old teachers who are still around, and I'm very grateful to them. There's quite a few amazing actors came out of there.
So, who is in your graduating class?
You might know Maren Hinkle. She plays the mom on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
I interviewed her in her apartment, and we made chocolate together.
Oh, how funny. Yeah,
back incredible. In the day,
she's great. We're still very close.
Yeah, that's great. So where did you live when you went to NYU? Did you live in the city or
all over the place? I probably couldn't have lived some of the places I live now, but I started out flopping with some friend in Park Slope just for a month or two, and then I got a place in Jersey City with a few of my classmates. And then I lived in the East Village. I lived on the Bowery. You know, it was one of those things for me. There was a few days I didn't have a place because there was a year I was just doing sort of house sitting. You see how it's going, right? It's not like I could sleep in poor or something, but, you know, NYU was a bit out of my reach. So I was fortunate to get an assistantship, they called. I was like the janitor, the janitor student. I'd show up before everybody else and mop the floors and set out chairs for the day or build risers for the shows or something. And I got tuition for that and a little stipend. You know, I don't know where that came from. My parents are very hardworking people. And they did a real good job of making me feel like, you know, I could always find a way, even if it was out. I never felt like, maybe I had a little chip on my shoulder about it. It's like, well, I'm going to go there anyway. I'll show you. I was that kind of kid. Silly. But I enjoyed it a lot. And there was a few days that I didn't have like a, and I would go from house sit to house sit, but sometimes it'd be a day or two between them. So I'd have to just find some place. And I slept in like under a stairwell, like in the next place I was gonna live. Cause I didn't know where else to go. And I was so tired. So I just slept on these boxes under the stairwell. And I heard the guy leave this apartment I was going to take care of, you know, and I just laid there for a while. Then I went upstairs and immediately went to bed. But it was so fun. And I have such a romantic memory of it, you know, just having this dream, this thing that was so strong I wanted to do. Nothing would stop me and nothing was depressing. It was exciting. In a lot of ways, I miss that naive enthusiasm, you know, because you just feel like nothing will stop me.
I think that's why you're such a good actor, because you really need it. I mean, I have this philosophy about acting. I feel like you have to need it in order to do it. You can't just want it. You know what I mean?
Maybe so. I think you also have to love people. That's getting harder and harder to do these days. You know, you really have to want to tell a story that, you know, there's so many stories we see and that so many of us can relate to, and you forget that, you know, just how diverse experiences are in this world, you know, and there's, you know, people can relate to Captain Monroe on a lot of levels. Like, oh, I'd like to work for this guy. You know, he was out walking his dog and the bank robbery happened. And here he is. He's obviously a Trojans fan. You know, he's a mellow guy. He's just one of the guys with his men, but he's, you know, he's hard nosed, but fair, whatever, you know, and people recognize that. They're like, I know someone like that. Or I know someone like Bert, or my family was like the Chances. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, but there was a lot of love. You know, I think it's important for us in my business to remember, you know, who we're working for in a lot of ways. You know, this can't exist in a vacuum, and, you know, and not to underestimate that, you know, identifiable quantity that is humanity. And it's important for people to identify. It's made me calmer. You know what I mean? I feel calmer on screen, on set. It comes with experience too. You know, I feel really at home on a set, and I know how to help, and I know how to be creative, and I can change things on the fly. But I think you got to love people.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of loving people, I want to hear this story about how you met your wife.
Oh, all right. Yeah, sorry. My wife is a wonderful actress named Michelle Hurd. She's currently on Star Trek Picard.
That little show.
Yeah, that little show with incredibly talented people on it, and she's killing it. Her character's name is Rafi, and you know, it's one of the it's exciting to see, because, you know, I've always known what Michelle can do. You know, she's always been capable of more than she's been given, and she's been given quite a lot, but she's been given a real complex character with this one, and she's just killing it. You know, she's just destroying it, and the fans again are really identifying with that character. You know, she struggles. She's not perfect. She struggles with addictions. She struggles with her emotions and her anger. And, you know, she seems like a human being who's functioning in this very, you know, demanding situation. But we met long ago. I was, I don't know, 96, maybe. And we both auditioned for the same play. It was the last play ever done at a place called Circle Rep. New York.
Oh yeah,
remember them? Yeah, they did a ton of amazing stuff. A lot of Lanford Wilson plays, you know, got their launch there. By the time we were there, they didn't have their space really anymore. Their theater was on like a floor of an office building. They didn't have their own theater anymore, so it was kind of this small black box. And it was a play called 900 Oneonta, a sort of exploded Tennessee Williams Southern Gothic thing. And we played lovers in that. You know, I was some alcoholic, you know, heir apparent to this plantation, and she was my prostitute girlfriend. So there was just enraging my family because I was bringing her in, and she ends up owning the whole joint. But yeah, first day of rehearsal, it's a good cast. John Cryer's in it, Missy Pyle, and a lot of great people. I'm talking with Missy, and I'd never met Michelle before, and she came in. It's a hot day in New York. She came in on her rollerblades.
I love her already.
Back in the day, she was always rollerblading. And it was hot, and she was wearing, like, you know, tiny shorts and, like, a tube top. And so on her blades, she was, like, 9 feet tall, golden, you know, bronze and like, you know, super fit and friendly and just a smile from ear to ear. And I, you know, she rollerbladed in. I was just like, because I looked ridiculous. I was like, oh no, she's going to be so upset that she's going to have to kiss me in this thing. I looked like an idiot, you know, my high water pants, my black shoes and white socks. What was I thinking? So that's what I was thinking. And I could barely get a word out. And I turned back to keep speaking with Missy. So she thought I was just some racist asshole. She's like, oh, great. Sure. Talk to the white girl. And I was just tongue tied. We joke a lot about our different perceptions of that same moment.
Next time I meet her, I have to ask her opinion of how you met.
It was fun though. You know, and so we did the play and then asked her out later. I think we both were with people at the time. But, soon after that, we were not. We've been together ever since.
So you worked together in Leap Years.
We did. That was about 5 years into our relationship. There was a TV show called Leap Years. I think it was my first contract role, early, like 2000, maybe. I think 2000, 2001, somewhere around there. We shot that in Toronto. And we went in for the callback, and we kind of pretended we didn't know each other because we were nervous that they would be nervous to hire an actual couple.
Huh.
But we got the call that we had it as we were walking back to our car.
I think they should give you a little role on Captain Picard.
Maybe.
Especially with your little bald head right now, you and Patrick Stewart.
They're doing fine over there. I think they've shot everything they're going to shoot. But can't wait for you to see all of it.
Oh, I know. And I can't wait for everything that's coming out for you. You're so busy.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, I don't know if actors ever feel super busy. It always seems like every gig's your last, you know, but it's been a good year. You know, I think the pandemic, as many mistakes as actors made during the pandemic, it made us all real hungry once we got out. And Ambulance was one of the first ones I shot, you know, out of it. It was still... protocols were still very strict, but I think Michael was just itching to shoot something as well. And both of us enjoy this sort of run and gun style. So it was a good match. I hope I get to work with him again.
Yeah, absolutely. So aside from the high octane action of Ambulance, what else do you want audiences to come away with?
I want them to have a good time, and I want them to, you know, be caught up in the story. I think this story makes sense. You know, and I think Aza Gonzalez gives a star turn as the paramedic. I think she's in this movie. I can't say I've seen everything she's been in. I just met her on this, but she's obviously blindingly gorgeous. And I think in this movie, she proved that that's not all she is. You know, she always knew that, but sometimes this business likes to pigeonhole you. And I think we're going to see her. I hope she remembers me. she's about to blow up big time. You know what I mean? I think she did great, and I thought Jake and Yaya were really good. Jake's really good he's a really good communicator. He's like a theater actor almost in the way he deals with language, and I appreciated that he trusted the audience enough to go like the scene where he lets the cop into the bank. You know, and the turn on his face, but I appreciated that he was a good actor in the movie. Do you know what I mean? Like his character was a good enough actor. He didn't have to telegraph anything to the audience. They knew he was fooling this guy, you know, and he did it in a way that was believable. So I think, you know, Michael assembled a really good cast is what he did. And then he shot the hell out of it.
Cool. Well, it was such a thrill to meet you. I'm so excited.
Hope I didn't gab on too long. It's nice to meet you too.
No, not at all. And I can't wait to see whatever you're shooting in Kentucky.
Yeah, you'll like it. Me and Orlando Bloom are over here.
Ooh.
He's real nice. Handsome.
Thank you, Garrett.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take good care.
You too.
I'm sorry, brother.
I think it's the best of me.
me. Sorry that I brought you into this.
Always new.
Always refreshing.
Always candid.
Always milling about.
Robin Milling delivers what celebrities are saying to you.